Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club for this morning. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
One of the mornings I look at Adam White and I think, how much sleep have you had? We'll find out. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. Not too much, but that's okay.
It's okay. It's your sort of favourite time of the year, the European summer. You've talked about this a bit, but Wimbledon, being such a tennis fanatic as you are, Wimbledon, I imagine, takes up a fair bit of your attention through the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has. So this week coming is going to be a challenge off the back of Wimbledon with the Open. But no, it's good fun.
You've got a couple of days off, though.
Yes, a couple of days off, but with three kids under five and getting up as early as we do, it's a challenge, but that's okay. Just the grumpiness levels are at a higher level than normal, but I mean, it's hard to be grumpy when we saw two amazing finals performances, to be perfectly frank. Gabi Muguruza was playing against Venus Williams on Saturday night, and it was a really good final, the first set. It was a really high-quality game of tennis. Venus Williams had the set points. She couldn't convert, and then she couldn't win another game. Muguruza was fantastic in the way she just obliterated Venus Williams. And, of course, last night we see Roger Federer win his eighth title, losing only eight games. In what I thought was a danger match for him, I actually thought Cilic had a winning chance going into that match, but he didn't drop a set for the entire 2 weeks. Including in the final. It was. It got to the point where Cilic almost broke down mentally.
Well, he did, didn't he? Three games into the second set.
Yeah.
He just collapsed, didn't he?
Yep. He just... This is just all getting too much. And, I mean, it is incredible to see that, you know, we think of Roger Federer as the greatest tennis player of all time. But at his age, in his mid-30s, he's arguably playing better than he's ever played before.
Mm.
And he has had to actually reinvent... in a way, the way he played, because he got to a point where he was just getting beaten too often by Nadal and Djokovic and, to a lesser extent, Murray. So he actually went, you know, I've got to reinvent this because I want more. And what he's been able to do is amazing to see that sort of transformation from the greatest tennis player of all time.
Well, Jimmy Bartel has seen many an opponent break down in tears through the course of a game, just trying to compete at his level. It's not possible for other mortal footballers to compete at his level throughout his 300-game career. He joins us again. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Half. Thanks for that welcome on a Monday. Good to see you again.
Nice to be seen.
I haven't seen you in a few weeks. I missed you.
You're saying all the right things here.
That's true.
Yeah. No, going well. As you said, huge weekend of sport and a lot of sleepless nights. I'm a bit like Whitey. I love getting up and watching all these big European sporting events and looking forward to the Open coming up.
The Open Championship. Now, if I'm not right, I'm mistaken, the Open kicks off at a good time for us. Is that right? The time zone?
Oh, yeah. It'd be fantastic.
It's about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock sort of activity?
About PM? About that. So because there are so many in the field and the light is so good over there, they hit off at about 6 o'clock in the morning, which is 3 o'clock in the afternoon our time. So the coverage starts at about 6 o'clock.
Then
seem to be corrected and goes right through to late.
Now, I forget his name, but I don't think he does it anymore. The guy who introduces on the tee.
Yeah. Yeah, he retired.
So I used to enjoy that.
Ivor Robson.
Yes.
Ivor Robson. Very good. Very good.
From group number 45 from Australia, Adam Scott.
round of applause.
Yeah, I loved him.
Yeah.
Last year was his final performance, wasn't it? I think. We're going to have a new voice.
I reckon it's 2 years.
Is it 2 years?
I stand to be corrected.
2 years. Well, regardless, it's not going to be the same, Jim. You're right. That was what you look forward to for the Open Championship.
I remember still playing, you'd walk back in the change rooms and you hear the boys just going, in the change rooms, on the tee, Tom Hawkins. Yeah, they self-introduce themselves. It's fantastic.
Yeah, good on them. Yeah. Good on them.
It's one of those great sporting voices. Yeah,
it is.
Was it Warren and Bruce Buffer, the brothers who do the boxing and the MMA? You know, it's time. And just one of the great sporting voices that you associate. Like, as soon as you hear his voice, you get British Open.
Mm.
It's fantastic. It's like the dude who does Let's Get Ready to the Rumble.
Yeah, Buffett.
Is that Buffett?
Yeah, I think his brother does the MMA.
He does
It's Time.
Yeah, yeah. So little catchphrases, little voices that associate with sport. Now, Richie Beno is obviously the one that we associate probably the most prominently with sport in Australia, I would imagine. Anyone else beat him?
Well, I associate cricket when you, as a kid, you turn on and the Nine Wide World of Sports and, you know, the dun, 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 and then the very last bit is Go, I got him. Last ball of the day. Yeah, the Bill Laurie.
The Bill Laurie, yes. Well, certainly Bill's one of the famous voices. Is he going to be doing much cricket this summer? If there's going to be cricket this summer, of course.
There'll be cricket this summer.
Is there going to be cricket this summer?
Of course there will be.
You sure? Is that only because Will Sutherland's chosen cricket now that James will come to the party?
That's exactly right. No, of course there will be.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Adam?
Absolutely sure. They'll be going to Bangladesh. They'll be...
Off to the dishes?
Yeah.
Is that the reason why they put the strike in? They don't want to go to... Right. Can we just postpone that tour?
Yeah. Well, there has been a fair bit of progress made in the last week, so I don't think there's any danger there won't be any Ashes, especially the way England's playing at the moment. They'd want to make sure they play.
Well, that's true too. That is true. Hey, just we've got Matty Griffin talking golf a little bit later on, but the US PGA Tour, the John Deere Classic, which Stack Johnson has loved for the last couple of years, has been a good tournament for a few Aussies, Whitey. Cam Percy's performance is quite
really
heartening,
good,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth mentioning just in the Scottish Open overnight, for those that like their golf, Andrew Doat didn't win, but he was in the final group, but he did well enough to actually get direct qualification through to the Open Championship, so he'll play this week. So he was one of three. There were three spots up for grabs that for those that weren't already qualified, and he was able to get through. But, it is really good to see Cam Percy, who was going really well at the start of the summer. You might remember when we spoke to him.
Yep.
Summer our time, and then he got injured, had that bad back, and he's been able to come back and get a couple of good performances. So as it stands at the moment, he's in a tie for 10th. So to finish as strongly as he has, he went 66-67 on the weekend. That'll be really important to try and get enough FedEx Cup points to be able to get to hold his card for next year, because he had those good performances at the start of the year.
And the other one that performed really well is Greg Chalmers, who was 11 under through his tournament, finishing in a tie for 22nd. Stuart Appleby also, funnily enough, finished at 11 under. But great to see some of those guys that are sort of fringe on the US PGA Tour perform so well at a tournament like the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, Stuart actually shot 64 on the Saturday, so he that was great news for
Couldn't
him.
Couldn't back it up on Sunday, though.
No, exactly right. There's only so many birdies available, Daniel. But I think the thing with these sort of tournaments is that a lot of the big names aren't playing because they're getting ready for the third major of the year. So these even become more important for those sorts of players, because it is a chance when the field isn't quite as strong to try and get a top 10, which is which gets more money, which again gives them more FedEx Cup points.
I think I said before Warren Buffett.
You did say Warren Buffett.
He's doing well. He's managing billions of dollars and commentating on the wrestling.
Michael. The main man at Berkshire Hathaway. And
Berkshire Hathaway.
Now doing the UFC
announcing. Omaha, yes. He's a busy man. Very busy. Michael and
Bruce.
Bruce, yes.
Thank you, Kingy, off the SMS for just clarifying that. As soon as you said Warren, I thought, hang on a second. Well, wasn't quite sure.
It's a name.
I'm not
it's
hanging not with billionaires right myself. I know you hang with billionaires and you get confused when you talk to those big wigs, but I don't get to that stage. Andrews and Sorrento wants to get involved early on the open line. 1-300-652-927. He probably hangs out with Warren Buffett as well. Good morning, Andrew.
Morning, boys. I've just got a quick question about the Carlton game. When Cruiser knocked the ball down and Mitch Wallace socketed it through, the time, as soon as that ball goes in the air, is that ruckman under pressure because he's that close to goal? Could Cruiser have just punched the ball straight through for a behind without penalty?
No. If you punch it straight through from a ruck contest, it's considered deliberate out of bounds. Same way, if you're around the ground with a ball up or a throw-in and you punch it straight out on the full, it's a free kick to the opposition.
Yeah. So is it on the full, it's got to go over the line for Matty Cruiser to have given away the free kick? Or
yes. Well, on the full, it's straight away. Unless... because there was players around and then it bounces through, you can say, well, it's deemed not to be deliberate.
Yep. It was clever from Mitch.
Yeah.
To get in the spot and just throw a boot at it.
Yep.
I mean, you shouldn't allow that to happen that close to goal if you're the defensive team as well. And Carlton are so good in those situations normally.
Yeah, you normally just drop it down and sort of tackle or force another ball up.
Or roll over the line.
Yep, try.
What did you think of that game yesterday?
In what way? It was good for the Bulldogs.
I'm going to say something that might not be seen as popular.
This is a Bulldogs game, remember? Steve-O's coming in from 7. Don't go too hard.
No, I'm not going to talk about the Bulldogs. I don't share the same optimism a lot of people do about Carlton.
Why?
I don't know. What's got you goat? No, I don't. I know they've had 5 rising stars, and I know that they've been competitive in a lot of matches they've played. But I don't know. I don't share the same optimism that, that things are going to be blue skies ahead.
What's got you worried? Is it the style of play? Is it, as you said, is it the cattle that it's coming through?
Yeah, I think they need their best older players to play well to be competitive. And as I said, I know they're getting their rising star nominations, but I don't see five or six of them being 250-game star players. Now, I know they're still very early in their careers. I don't know. I watched them yesterday, and I don't know. I just don't share the optimism that there seems to be this real positivity around about Carlton. I don't see it.
I understand what you're saying, because I think you're right that their experienced guns have to play well for them to be a competitive team against most on most weekends. And you look at the guys who have got the Rising Star nominations, there's not a Mark Murphy coming through, there's not a Bryce Gibbs coming through.
They're peripheral players.
Yeah, they're the outside the 5-6 sort of midfielder players, as opposed to your guns who are going to be the engine room for the next 10 years. There's not that, I don't think, at the Blues at the moment.
Well, he could be an exception.
He could be the Koutafidis exception. I mean, that's just...
But there's still a bit of a he could be.
You yeah. Don't look oh, yeah. Go, like, but that's fair enough as a kid.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
He could be. I think their real gun factor through the middle is the concern for them.
Well, Petrescu, Seaton eventually moves into the midfield, doesn't he?
Maybe. Don't know.
Again, this is just my opinion, and I hope for Carlton fans I'm wrong, because I think it's time that they had a bit of success. But I hear the commentary around them that they're just... It's going to happen. They're going to be good. And I just don't see that at this time. I don't see that I just think there's so much still a heavy reliance on Gibbs, Cripps, Murphy, Cruiser, all those guys playing really well. Their forward line continues to be a major issue. So I hear Brendan Bolton talk about green shoots. Thank you for that text message.
Greatest message, the green shoots. What about the green shoots? And there are green shoots. There's a lot to like about the players that have been developed and those Rising Star nominations and a few other players. And you know, Liam Jones has become all of a sudden a crucial part of their makeup, signed a 2-year extension, which is fantastic.
That is the most extraordinary thing of all time, is his resurgence.
Yeah, it is. And we'll talk about that, I reckon, after 7 with Steve-O, because I think it's worth discussing. But I tend to agree with you, Waddy, that the staff power and the staff factor of Carlton isn't quite there.
So a few more names, but they're not quite first years. But so you don't have faith in Wiedering, Plowman, Marchbank?
Yeah, no, but I think you've got to have them in your engine room. And I don't think that they've got the depth in that area. They've got all these good kids, but they play at either end of the ground.
I think is sometimes harder to find.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you can go to the draft and you have a look. Your top 20 picks are probably 12 of them are midfielders.
Yeah,
I think
you're easy. I kind of agree what you're saying. I mean, you got Marchbank, you've got Plowman, you've got Wiedering in defence. I understand all of that. Their forward line, it's, yeah.
Yeah, they clearly need help.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But even though there is positivity around the Blues and what they've been able to do, I'm not sure anyone's suggesting it's going to be a quick fix in the next sort of 24 months, are they? I know it's going to be still a bit of a burn to get to a chance where they can contend. And anyone who says that teams can just walk into a spot to contend in 2 or 3 years from where they've been is naive in the best place anyway, because it's too hard. The game has proven in the last 10 years particularly, I reckon it's become really difficult to elevate. Now, we saw the Bulldogs do it as a bit of a jack-out-of-the-box sort of situation last year. But you go through history, there's not too many that can blossom really quickly without the depth of talent that the Bulldogs did.
No, and I am a bit with you, Waddy, that just by going to the draft and just having lots of young talent, you do the 5-year wait, as they say, half, and all of a sudden you're a premiership contender. I don't believe in that. You need a lot of things like luck to go your way with injuries. You also need to keep developing a good game style. There's always coaching changes. So I understand that. There's no guarantees. People thinking, well, you're Carlton a building, then next year we're going to be a bit better than the next year after that, and then we're contending for finals. I don't believe in
There's
that.
No theory. Linear progression in footy. No, it doesn't happen like that.
So a lot of people fall into that trap. Well, okay, we're down the bottom, we're showing a bit, next year we're going to be better, and so on. But they've got to make improvements. But the thing I do like about Carlton, and what makes me a little bit more optimistic than you, Whitey, is that there's a clear, you can see when you go watch Carlton, it's clear what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The fortunate thing is, I think Doherty, how old's Doherty? 24. So he's probably their best handful of players. They get a lot more out of him. Murphy, is he 30 yet?
Yeah, I think Murph's 30.
And Gibbs, late 20s.
Yep.
They've got to hold on to the Gibbs. So they've still got a few more years to run while these young players can build into, you know, that 22, 23 age bracket.
Mm. Oh, no, Murph's 29. He's going to be 30 on Wednesday. Funnily enough, there you go.
Happy birthday.
Birthday, Murph.
I was just watching them yesterday, and I didn't think the Bulldogs played very well at all. I think there was at times they looked a little bit better, but I reckon they were there to be beaten yesterday. And we've just seen Carlton put in these really sort of admirable efforts because they're so defensively minded that they can stay in the game because they frustrate the opposition. But
well, it proves they're coachable, I think, that.
I think Brendan Bolton, don't get me wrong, I think Brendan Bolton has done an excellent job with the team that he's got. And I think that Carlton will be fine. But I think, as I said, there's been this real sort of swell of optimism about them this year. And, you know, when does it get to a point where, you know, they've got to be better than just nuisance value? And I think that's how I find them at the moment.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I think the way they've been able to be shaped by Brendan Bolton and adhere to a plan, if they can get more quality and depth of talent through the middle of the ground, from my perspective anyway, then I think it gives them a chance.
Are they better to go and get, you know, a Josh Kelly?
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously everyone would be better than a Josh Kelly. No one will be better than getting a Josh Kelly at 22 to come in and make them better.
Yeah.
He'll make every team better. But what is their focus over the next 2 years? Is it to keep going to the draft with the picks that they've got, or are they prepared to give away picks to get those sort of 22, 23-year-olds in?
Well, I think at the timeline that they've set themselves is important on that to answer that question. If they think that the next 2 years is still going to be development phase, then they go to the draft and they get the best they can through that. Otherwise, if they think they're perhaps a bit more advanced than we do after this discussion, then they have to go and try and acquire the best young talent that is semi-established at this stage of their career. Speaking of young talent, John's on the road. He's given us a call, 1-300-652-927. G'day, John.
G'day, fellas. I just want to talk about McGrath, isn't it? I reckon he's a very consistent, probably one of the best first-year players I've seen for his size and height. And I'd like to see him play a few games in the middle in the near future. I just think he's very sure for his first-year player. I think he's a gun.
Jim?
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore with John. The one thing with that is people's urgency or rush, a good player at half-back or half-forward to be a midfielder. I'd never understood that. Maybe they could just be an outstanding half-back flanker and play their career a la my ex-teammate Corey Enright.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Gavin Wanganeen. That's a big...
he's high praise.
Yeah, it's high praise.
Ooh, but I love Wanganeen as a player.
The way he plays does remind me a little bit of Andrew McGrath. And, you know, almost the best part about him is him as a person and his leadership skills and his maturity for someone so young to bring that calibre of person into a footy club. I think Essendon's on a winner there. But I actually disagree with John. I think he's number two on the pecking order for Rising Star.
Well, who you got number one?
I think Sam Powell-Pepper's
the
best. Powell-Pepper. To come into the starting four of a midfield that is in the top four and essentially push Travis Boak out to a half-forward flank.
So your top three quickly? Powell-Pepper, Burton, McGrath?
I'd have McGrath second and probably Burton third.
So biased.
Who you got?
Oh, Burton's... Clear standout.
McGrath for me.
I think Powell-Pepper's the most dominant. Matty Griffin, he's not worried about all that, although he would have been concerned that the D's didn't get the chockies over the Crows up there in Darwin, being a big Melbourne fan. But he's got bigger fish to fry this week. He's got the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. He's just played a practice round. He's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Matty.
Good morning, guys.
Are you concerned about the D's performance, just quietly?
Not so much. We're hoping we get a few of our boys back on the park in the next week or two, and I think they'll be right.
A balanced perspective. I like that from you, Matthew. What about Royal Birkdale? You got the Open Championship. Very exciting week, I'm sure, for you to be a part of one of the great tournaments on the golfing calendar. And what did you make of the course?
The course is fantastic. It's a real test. I think if the wind's predicted to blow a bit as the week goes on, and whoever's there on top on Sunday will really deserve the win.
When you get there and you know that you're a part of the Open Championship week and all that goes with it, the hoopla that goes with being a part of an Open Championship, what is it like when you walk into the course for the first time knowing that it's going to be a massive week for you?
I think it's definitely a place where the hairs on the back of your neck stand up as you walk in. There's so much history, and just looking at the, it's such a incredible. It almost look, you look into the 18th green, and it almost looks like a standing outside the MCG. The stands are so big. It's definitely a different feeling to any other tournament I've played in my career to date.
Brad, when you go there and it's Link Styles golf, do you get a sense of confidence? Being Australian, you know, we have the Sandbelt courses over here. It feels a little bit more comfortable than, you know, the types of greens and that the Americans play on?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. It's much closer to the golf we play at home. It's very, very different, but it is a similar style to what we have back at home. The greens aren't as nowhere near as fast as what they are in America, and really important to be straight off the tee. There's a lot of, here at Birkdale, there's a heap of nice fairway bunkers that'll grab your ball, and you, from most of them today, it looked like you're chipping out sideways if you are. So you definitely have to be straight off the tee, and I've been able to get here a little bit earlier and played a bit of golf in Scotland last week, which has been a really nice lead-in.
So, Matt, when you were on the golf course, you've just literally got off the golf course at Royal Birkdale. What are you doing? How many balls do you hit? How many hours are you actually out there? And what are you trying to learn about the golf course before it gets serious later in the week?
Really trying to find out how the course plays depending on the breeze. So today we had a nor'wester, and later in the week I think we're expected to turn around to the south. So you're trying to, hopefully, in your practice stage, hoping to play the course in a couple of different breezes. So you work out where you can hit off the tee, where the best place to be is. And then also the other thing is you're just trying to, I guess you're really scanning around the golf course to see where's the rough longer, where can I miss it if I do hit a bad shot, and just, I guess, trying to negotiate the best path to the best score around Birkdale.
So do you literally take notes? Or is it just more mental, sort of mental notes as you're walking around with your caddy with those sort of situations? Because as you were talking about, I've checked the weather forecast. It is meant to blow really heavily later in the week. So how important are those things? Because I know how big you are on course management.
Yeah, really important. I think a little bit of both with taking mental notes, and then you also, they do, at these tournaments, you get great yardage books. So provide you with a lot of detail, and you just writing little notes in the book and crossing out areas that are no-go zones, and I guess finding those places if it does get really windy that you can sort of, I guess, take the safest route. And for me as well, I always found course management to be a bit of a strength. So if I can hopefully do that as best as possible, it gives me a chance to try and get up there in the leaderboard.
Do your expectations change at major championships, Matty? In terms of what you expect from yourself, not so much where you finish, but the way you play. Is there a major factor that kicks in, or is a different element to your game?
I think you definitely know that the golfing world's watching. Whereas you go playing a regular tournament in Japan, people that are close to you and a lot of mad golf fans would see the results. But when there's a major championship on, you know, everyone that's interested in sport is generally watching, especially with the Open. So I guess that does heighten things a bit, but I'm trying my best just to treat it as a normal week, which the reality is that when I stand on the first tee on Thursday, it won't be a normal week, but just trying to treat it as much as just going out there to play golf and try and really soak up the atmosphere and have a bit of fun. And I think that'll be the best way that I'll play my best, is if I can do that.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, morning, Half.
Talk about danger.
Well, scans today, it's potential bone bruising on top of the ankle, which you guys would know better than I. It's a tough one to play with, the bone bruising. It can hang around for a while.
Yes.
Even though at times in that last quarter, he was moving. He ran about 200 metres at full tilt with 2 minutes left to get that ball. Extraordinary performance by Danger.
It was.
But he did pull up sore yesterday, couldn't walk on it, and a scan down at Geelong, and I dare say there might be a few media down there, Jimmy, waiting for him.
Yeah, I think all the cameras will be out in the car park and watching him, see whether he's hobbling or not. But normally when you have an injury like that in-game, I'm not sure about you, Harford, you can sort of play out the game because you're still warm and amped up.
Adrenaline.
The adrenaline's still going.
It's a fantastic thing.
But 24 hours later, you're a lot sore. You actually go, how do I actually get through the rest of the game? So
that's the danger, absolutely, yes. For danger. Oh, pardon
yeah,
the pun.
Danger, the danger field.
For Paddy.
But there's controversy surrounding that.
And what's happened?
Let's have a listen to Kane Corns, of course, Port Adelaide, well-connected in Adelaide, to what he says about danger and the way Danger goes about his injuries.
He does exaggerate injuries. Oh. Well, it goes back to...
Hang on. Now we're shooting bands.
No, I'm not.
Fake it till you make it.
In his time at Adelaide, his teammates had to sit him down and say, look, you do carry on a little bit with your injuries. And he does. So I'd be surprised if he missed with that injury yesterday.
Whack.
So that's some inside knowledge from Adelaide, though.
That's good feedback. He's gone strong with that. Jimmy, you were down there with the great man. Hmm. Any signs that Danger sort of put some mayonnaise on the injuries?
Well, no mayo that I saw on top of it. He generally goes hard all the time, flat out. He does get battered around a bit because of the way he plays. But, no, I've never questioned, well, in my time, I was only played a year with him, whether he was hurt or not. We saw he got collected in the ribs earlier this year. Can forgive him for staying down a little bit, couldn't you?
Is that a question?
That's a question to you, Adam.
Mr. White.
I think at times it would appear that there might be a little bit of embellishment going on.
Nah. A little bit of mayonnaise.
I've never seen any from mayo from him, and it's hard. It's always hard to question that about a player. Kane must have some very good inside knowledge then from the Crows if he's gone with that.
I think there's plenty of players in the system these days that once they get a bit of a whack, there's a bit of TV time, and they just take some time to recoup and regather themselves and make sure that it's drawn out as much as possible. Possibly more for rest than anything else.
Yeah, well, it used to be the old small forward trick, you know, so you didn't have to chase out.
Yes.
they do the lunging tackle where, well, I'll just stay on my side and watch the play come out, and then all of a sudden the ball's turned over and up they jump. They're in space.
Yes, yeah, so 6-day break, obviously the issue, Whitey.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough to get out.
Obviously is really significant, particularly with Rory Sloane. He'll have to go through the hoops during the week after getting concussed. Two of the best players for either team are under an injury cloud off a shorter break.
Ooh, isn't the answer he just plays full forward?
Well, he can.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, really. The adrenaline's gone, though, Jimmy.
Yeah, no, that's...
He has to get up again.
He's got to fire it up again.
He can just play inside 50.
Can I ask about that, though? What Patrick Dangerfield did, now, to football back in the 80s and 90s, that was just sort of regulation sort of stuff, just play deep and get some one-on-ones. Mm. Why doesn't it happen more often? Why did it take for an injury to happen for that sort of football to be played by Geelong?
Well, I think if you played football like it was played in the 80s and perhaps early 90s, where there was, if you played that deeper role one-on-one, you'd be coming forward to the footy all the time. I think you'd probably be able to do it more often. But the way that forward line setups are these days, where you're pressing up and rolling back, trying to get back into the space, I just don't think it's viable for those type of players too often. Every now and then you can pinch hit and do what Danger did on the weekend. But I don't think the way the game is played allows that to happen too often.
So from a coaching point of view, there was nothing potentially learnt from other AFL coaches the role that Patrick Dangerfield played on Saturday? Maybe we could do that with a player that was 100% fit.
You need more pressure on the ball. So they'd look at it more from a defensive aspect, is that if you don't have pressure on the ball, you allow... You know, the danger fields and that inside 50. Look how dangerous it is. So Hawthorn needed to apply more pressure on the ball. So the kicks coming in weren't to Patrick Dangerfield's advantage. He actually gave, I forget the Hawthorn player who got stuck one-on-one. They tried a few, actually.
There's a few through the roster.
A few through there. But it looks like it's, you know, their fault, for want of better words. But no pressure on the ball carrier coming through the middle of the ground. You kick it to Dangerfield or any half-decent forward's advantage.
Yeah,
it's going to be very difficult to stop.
I understand what you're saying. We just found it interesting that Dangerfield did what he did. So he had 11 shots at goal in pretty much three quarters. And then when Dustin Martin played forward against Brisbane, every time the ball got kicked down there, you think, well, Dustin's going to mark this, or he's going to at least get a shot at goal. Why it doesn't happen more?
But we're seeing more of that from Dusty this year. And I think Paddy's averaging more than two goals a game and 30 disposals as well, the first bloke since Bob Skelton to do it. So it's, I mean, they're pretty remarkable numbers and they're pretty remarkable players. There's not too many that fit the category that could do it.
Yeah. We've just spoken about probably, yeah, the two runaway leaders in the Brownlow.
No, I do understand that, but I'm just wondering whether if it could create a different structure for genuine forwards to play the way that
I'm sure Geelong will try it. Try it more often now as the year goes on.
I just kept thinking about, well, gee, you put Gary Ablett in that forward line as well next year, and you think Ablett, Hawkins.
That was my big takeaway, is that if people don't see what the danger is for them, if Gary Ablett ends up at Geelong, so Dangerfield and Ablett swapping midfield forward. Look out.
Scary.
Your boys, the Doggies, what's going on there? Injuries to Stringer?
Yeah, Stringer.
Clyde back?
Yeah, good to Jimmy, you're reading the list. That's fantastic. We're down.
No,
the
I'm
string.
Just talking about your doggies. You tended the fleck off the doggies.
No, I thought the doggies were all right yesterday. They had their structure back. They really didn't look like losing that game after Carlton kicked the first three goals. I know that Whitey driving in was a little bit disappointed, but they're pretty happy inside the kennel with a lot that went on yesterday. Carlton really couldn't get their game going whatsoever. The backward handball and
The Bulldogs have got one issue, and that is their percentage. Because I was going through it last night. I reckon you need 12 wins to make the finals, and the Bulldogs have got to find a way to improve their percentage. So, yes, they were better, but this issue with their scoring is still a factor because they need to get their percentage up to 110, 115, I think, to be guaranteed of playing finals.
Well, I don't think it'll happen, Whitey. They're too far back from a percentage.
Well, that could cost them a spot in the finals.
Have you got a new favourite player? The debutant, yes.
Yeah, Lewis Young.
He's a favourite player for me with long sleeves.
Long sleeves on debut is a real statement as well.
Yeah,
and
another thing, in
Choco Royal's number as well. So there was two things to like about him. 9 marks. And
intercepts.
As well, just sort of floated through the air. A lot of talk about Josh Battle at St Kilda debuting as a schoolboy. This bloke, Lewis Young, played on Josh Battle a week earlier in the VFL. Took him to the cleaners and did it again today. So a low-key debut, far more low-key than Josh Battle, but he did a good job.
I just want to go back to the percentage situation with the Bulldogs. So the Bulldogs on 32 points at the moment, their percentage is 94.2.
Yes.
Essendon on 32 points, percentage 108.
So you reckon 12 games? You need 12 games.
No, I think you need 12
and
plus
a good percentage.
So they need 4 out of 6 is what we're saying.
Yeah.
So Essendon's percentage is a good advantage in that little pack.
Absolutely. You know, and even Melbourne, who are a game ahead, their percentage 106. And Sydney's percentage, a game ahead of the Bulldogs, is 113. Mm. So my point yesterday was I didn't think Carlton played particularly well. And I think the Bulldogs had an opportunity to win that game by 10 goals. And they've still got those forward line issues, which meant that they couldn't put it on the scoreboard. They're going to have to find 2 or 3 games where they can really score heavily to get their percentage up to 110, 115.
Well, they lost Stringer, which didn't help. So they were on the forward line. Travis Cloke potentially back next week, Luke Beveridge said after the
playing game. In Cairns.
Yeah.
Well, that's another
there
issue.
There you go, selling games. Talking about Melbourne before.
You're the reigning premier and you're selling games to Cairns. That just stinks. Because it
but they weren't the reigning premier when they did this deal, were they?
No, I know, but they don't need to do that anymore. You can
it's
cop it now.
Steve-O
you you go up and you still beat Gold Coast in Cairns. But just imagine, Whitey's talking about percentage. Just imagine getting hold of Gold Coast that Eddie had and getting the percentage. You could go to Cairns. It could be a tropical downpour.
Sweatbands out.
Sweatbands are out. It'll be 8 goals to 10 or something. Get them at Eddie had. Just in selling games half is a nonsense.
Well, you got it's an unfortunate it's bottom line. It's commercial reality of Australian rules football for a lot of clubs.
But the Bulldogs don't need that. They just made 2 or 3 mil out of a premiership.
Yeah, but they weren't premiership contenders when they made that deal. So you just got to cop that for another couple of years. The round 19 clash against Essendon might be the clincher. So their grand final might be next week. Yeah.
That'll be a great game.
Because then they've got Gold Coast this week, Essendon the week after, then back at the Gabba against the Lions. So possibly 3. If they win those 3, they need 4, we're saying, to get and a good percentage to get in the finals. Then they've got the Giants, Port Adelaide and Hawthorn to finish the season. Mm. So that's going to be a tough finish.
Giants
for that
he had, that fancy
yeah,
their
true.
Chances there. The Giants are really struggling in the way they're going about it. Port Adelaide, guess where that game is? The Bulldogs' home game.
Yes.
That's at MSB.
Ballarat.
Yeah.
So another sold.
I reckon they need 5 of 6.
Dogs have got 6 games left and 2 of them are sold. So hopefully they can get
think
over
the
that.
Cash they'll be making though, Steve. Yeah. Footy department spend.
You prefer to play finals. But I think they'll win. I think they'll get their 4 wins at least.
Enough Bulldogs. Who yeah. Who will replace Simon Lethlane? We haven't even spoken about what was an extraordinary Friday.
Extraordinary. Mm. Still getting our heads around what happened there. And it was an emotional time at the AFL. It's rocked a lot of people within the league. Amit Baines I've got on top of the list.
Your mate, Jimmy.
Very good operator.
Yeah, Jimmy's a big fan of Amit.
Well, he's just ticking all the boxes. He was basically offered the Hawthorn CEO job, knocked that one back, stayed at St Kilda, 2IC to Matt Finnis. He's done list management, good connections throughout the AFL.
Legal background.
And a little bit of a different cat, if you know what I mean. He's not the normal footy head, old boy network sort of setup.
Could there be another change at St Kilda that Amit goes to the CEO, Matty Finnis?
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing.
Or does Ian Prendergast come back from the Rugby League Players Association after his role at the AFL Players Association to take over that
potential
type of role?
Or Nathan Buckley, if he's looking for
he's coaching still.
If
he's sacked him already.
No, I think it's unlikely that Nathan will be there, as well as his coaching at the moment, Harf. And he would be ideal for that. But I like Amit Bain, somebody just out of the box. He's a different type of person and very highly rated. And Jimmy's nodding all the way through this.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Just hear glowing reports about Amit Bain.
What about Rodney Eade too, if he's very experienced as well?
So everyone's waiting on the first domino, aren't they? The music's about to start with all everyone looking for a chair, isn't it?
No, but I think what Jimmy says is really interesting, because I think the music has started, and I think there is a lot going on behind the scenes as we speak. And as you say, as soon as one falls, then the panic sets in.
Yes.
Steve Hocking, the other one.
Yes, he's
Jimmy would know very well, obviously. I do know. No nonsense, no fuss type of guy.
No. Well, in that role, I guess Monday morning, we were talking off air, Steve-O. Monday morning, your phone's ringing from 18 annoyed footy managers and coaches, and everyone's upset about something. So it's how you can handle relationships, and that's what Steve Hocking does well.
I know we don't have a lot of time here. I want to throw a scenario at you. If Mark Evans threw a 5-year contract at Nathan Buckley, what does Collingwood do?
They say, have a great time, Bucks. You've been great. Because I don't think they could give that. They couldn't give that to Nathan Buckley.
No, not 5 years.
There's no way they could give that to Nathan Buckley.
No, I agree with you.
Thanks, Bucks. You've been great.
Yeah.
Not sure the AFL, they hand out deals like that. It's just you come on board.
It's
like
the AFL.
No, no, because he's talking Gold Coast.
I'm talking about Gold Coast.
Oh, I thought he said...
Yeah, no, Gold Coast. Right.
Gold Coast
to coach.
No.
The disdain in your voice.
Bucks would just say...
But I'm saying about the first domino. Someone will lure someone with a big deal,
and
which
all
will
go,
create a domino effect.
It's who is going to move first.
And it's happened before, so it'll happen again. Someone will make a bold first move. It might be one we don't expect, but someone... Because I don't think Clarkson's going anywhere. So I think that it's now moving to, okay, Clarko's not going to do it. Who's next?
Speaking of the Magpies, quickly, Steve, before we let you go, just Peter up his hand.
Sore hand, couldn't shake hands after the game. Had a scan yesterday, which a red flag for me, Harf. If you're going for a scan on a Sunday...
Can't shake hands?
It's double time. They have to open it, which means it's serious.
No fist bumps.
I reckon you should have your own show, sort of like an RPA type setup.
We're setting up a freelance arrangement. Yeah, it's called Steve-O. Scan TV.
Go to an ad break just when you get the results.
You should wear a white lab jacket, Steve-O.
Yes, and some glasses and some pens in the pocket.
Executive producer, I'll be. Tommy Brown, general manager.
Scan TV is coming your way. Big decision made on the weekend from a young sporting star, Will Sutherland. Just happens to be the son of the Cricket Australia CEO, James Sutherland. A fantastic young footballer playing in national championships with Vic Metro, and clearly an outstanding young cricket candidate. He's chosen cricket, which I'm sure was music to the ears of Sean Graff from Cricket Victoria, who's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Graffy.
Hello, Daniel. How are you going, mate?
Very well, thank you. Did you know this was coming? Did you have an inkling that this would be the choice made by Will, or was this just a pleasant surprise?
It was more, I suppose, in some ways, a bit of a surprise. He was obviously doing very well with football, and knowing that he certainly enjoyed his cricket as well, and he's made big steps in from a cricketing point of view in the Australian Under-19 side. He's captained them. And we think he's got a great future. But footy came along, and he was playing very well, obviously, and they were talking top 10 in the draft. But Will's love of cricket obviously stood out, and fortunately from our point of view, he's chosen cricket.
Is there a process do you go in and campaign and bid and try and get him to choose cricket? How's it work?
Yeah, look, I spoke to his management, and his dad obviously didn't want to have too much influence on him. He felt there might have been conflict slightly. So I spoke to his management. Certainly our talent ID manager, Andrew Lynch, has spoken to him on numerous occasions. And obviously he's in our system as well. So a lot of our coaching staff and support staff in the Bush Rangers have spoken to him as well. So it's sort of we're trying to put as less pressure on him as possible, because he's obviously going through year 12. We're very mindful of that. And footy obviously had a fair go at him in relation to playing in the recent championships and everything like that. But fortunately, as I said before, I think his love of cricket is very strong, and he's also made fairly big inroads, and he's very much high on our list from Australian cricket's point of view as someone who we think has the potential to maybe go all the way. So he's chosen cricket over football, and now he's just got to get his get year 12 out of the way, and then from there on, hopefully we can get him right into the cricket scene, and we can progress him.
Sean, just touching on that and his potential to go very far in cricket, was that part of, I guess, the conversations, was mapping out almost a plan for him going forward, that the opportunities in Big Bash and Shield cricket and abroad, and you can play year-round compared to football?
Yeah, look, it's a fair call to me. I think one of the things that, as you would well know, one of the things in cricket, you can travel, and even though a lot of people, a lot of the young guys take the footy option, but the idea of being able to play cricket for your country and also be able to travel around the world, and the riches that are out there now for someone like him, who's very good, talented with the bat and the ball, means that a lot of the 2020 competitions come into play as well. So apart from the Australian scene, I think he's got great opportunities to maybe play in these other sort of competitions at a later date, which I think would have influenced his decision.
And as a football point of view, for people who are unaware, he's a key forward, mid-type. He could play both, but for people who are unaware, in cricket, you said bat and ball. At the elite level, what is his strength or his wheelhouse in cricket?
Well, I think at the moment he's got good pace with the ball, but he bats very well. He can bat in the top six, which really does help immensely, as we all know. If you can balance your team up by having someone who can maybe bowl first change or open the bowling, but also bat in your top six. So from our point of view, from cricket, it really does help us to be able to get a young boy into our teams. That can actually do a bit of both and actually hold his own with either, which is important. And I think, we're in a pretty exciting time with the Bush Rangers at the moment as well, where, we've won three in a row. We're in a bit of a rebuild, even though we're actually still winning. So it means that there's a lot of young boys coming through the system who, Will's one of them, who we'll progress through the ranks and try and get him an opportunity to go that next step.
Sean, congratulations on winning the battle. I must confess, I didn't hold out much hope for cricket because of the opportunities that young men get in AFL football over cricket, just the amount of opportunities.
Yep.
Can you explain a little bit the challenge that Cricket Victoria has when you've got 650-odd players playing AFL football versus the cricket situation where there's just so few that get a chance to even play cricket for Victoria? What's the sell, and do other things need to be done into the future to mean that more choose cricket over football?
Yeah, look, it is a hard one because the opportunity in football, as you mentioned, is enormous. We've only got at this present time we have 20 state contracts, we have six rookies, and then if you get an Australian player, they're outside of our system. So we've effectively, I think, at the moment got about 31 contracts available. And then each state's similar. Whereas football, you've got the 18 teams or whatever, you've got about 800 contracts. So it does make it difficult. But I suppose from our point of view, we as I mentioned before, we sell the opportunity to not only represent the country but also travel. And it's very, very rare that you actually are locked into a contract at home, but you're still providing you're not injured or you're not actually controverting any camps or any tours. We allow players to play overseas as well at the same time, which is very rare, I think, in a sport where we're happy to let our expensive cattle go overseas and play in other competitions. So the opportunities to actually to play cricket in good standards overseas, I think, is one of the lures that we have over maybe the homegrown football product.
Jared Blair, speaking of important, was his 150th game on the weekend back in the senior team. And it was great to see him perform on the big stage. Great to have him with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, boys. How are we?
We are very well, mate. Appreciate your time on a Monday morning. Must have been nice to be back out there for the Magpies. And game number 150, what does that mean to you to get to a milestone like that?
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. I'd been stranded on 149 for a while. Had probably five or six weeks in the twos, which wasn't all bad. It's not what you're here to do, but sort of enjoyed a few weeks down there with the younger boys. But, it was good to get back in the side and travel up to Metricon. And, it was a pretty special weekend, actually. It was a good win, and all the family came up, and girlfriend and a few mates. And the club really did put on a good show for us. And, to run out for my 150th alongside Wellesley and his 250th was pretty special.
When you are playing in the VFL and you've been such a regular senior performer, of course, a premiership player at the Magpies throughout your time, your 149 games prior to the weekend, I mean, how do you approach that? Because clearly, as you said, what you want to be doing is playing senior footy, but there's got to be a way you can not have a grudge or use too much negative energy when you're playing in VFL, because you've got to find a way to get back in form and get selected.
Yeah, I think I've reflected on it a bit, actually, and I think if you sort of do go back with a bad attitude, you're only taking yourself further away from getting back in the side. So feel like I handled that reasonably well, but you know, also thinking about it and looking at the competition overall and some of the players that you play against down there, there's no real shame in playing in the twos. You know, it's a good standard of footy, and there's a lot of good young guys down there as well. So as frustrating as it was, I actually enjoyed having a run around down there. Probably a little bit more freedom. Play a little bit more midfield time. So it was tough, and you want to be running out in the ones with all the boys. But it was pretty enjoyable 6 weeks down there, and the program is pretty good. You got Jared Rivers, his first year as a coach, and he's learning a lot every week, and he's very positive for our young players. And I did enjoy it, as frustrating as it was.
Jared, congratulations on 150 games. Part of that, as Half was said, a premiership side with a more experienced group. Since then, you've been in a fair bit of transition. You've seen a lot of young players come into the club. Can you talk us through, as a player, being there through the whole time as the club's transitioning, and do you sort of like it because all your old jokes are new again?
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. We're still running the same gag. They didn't get a laugh then, though, so they're not getting a laugh. a lot has changed. And I think, you know, it's a new challenge every year. There's new guys coming in. There's new blokes trying to prove their worth. You're making new mates every year. I do enjoy it. I look back at some of the guys I play with and those friendships that you've made. And I think when you're young at a football club, you know, they're the strongest friendships you'll ever have because you're sort of doing everything together. You quite often live together. But, you know, it's also exciting when you got new guys coming in and the likes of, you know, Callum Brown and Josh Dacos and Cale Kirby and all these kids who are going to be potentially the future of the club. And it's good to see them doing their work firsthand.
Do you feel you are a bit of a mentor to these young guys that you just listed?
To a degree, yeah. I think, it's sort of strange. You all of a sudden... Well, you never really view yourself as one of the older players, but, you know, then all of a sudden when you do reflect on it, you're like, well, I'm 27 and some of these kids were born in 98, 99. I think next year we're going to have blokes born in the 2000s on the list. So, when you sit back and look at it, I think you have to check yourself sometimes and make sure you're doing and saying the right things because these guys are probably looking at you a little bit, yeah.
Jared, we had a really good chat to you before the season started about expectations on the season and how you thought the team would go. For someone that is a premiership player at Collingwood and very experienced, I think your opinion counts significantly. How do you assess the season?
I think it's been frustrating, and it has obviously been disappointing. We're not where we want to be right now, and I think our expectations of this season were a lot higher than, 6-10 or something. Yeah, you know, I think we'd sort of be right amongst it. So it has been a frustrating year, and we feel like we've put together some good footy in patches in games, but like you boys know, you can't really play in patches with the sort of standard of competition at the minute. Anyone can beat you, and we have been too patchy, and it's sort of left us where we are, 6-10, and really fighting for it.
So the next question is, explain the mood of the camp. Obviously, last week was an interesting week where Gary Pert got you all together and said, Bucks isn't going anywhere. He's there for the rest of the season. As a senior player around the place, explain to our listeners, our Collingwood listeners particularly, what's the mood like?
The mood's actually pretty good. You know, we feel like we've still got something to prove in the next 6 weeks. We did have a chat early last week. You know, and it was sort of heart-to-heart, maybe you could call it, I suppose. And we just sort of spoke about making something of the next 7 weeks, you know, not just roll over and let the season fade away. Finals, who knows? I think we're maybe too far gone, but you win seven straight. That leaves us at 12 wins, and sides have played finals on 12 wins. So maybe unrealistic, but, we're determined to prove something. And, you know, on an individual level and as a team as well. And I think going into the weekend, it was a pretty good attitude. The week before, underperformed, and I think the boys looked a bit flat out on the ground, but a few conversations and a bit of heart-to-heart last week steeled the group a little bit and probably provided us with a bit more motivation to attack the last 7 weeks.
Matty Suckling knows a fair bit about footy. He's been around a while. He's a premiership player multiple times, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. G'day, Matty.
Good morning, guys.
Great to have you on, mate. Nice to get another win on the board. It's been sort of slim pickings for a little while, and was always going to be a tough challenge. What about the Blues made it so tough yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you just pointed out our last sort of 4 or 5 weeks hasn't been great. And yeah, it was awesome to get back to the MCG and start to play some better footy and get the win. And yeah, as you said, Carlton, they set up pretty well and they defend first. And yeah, they're pretty good at that too. So it makes it hard work.
When you've achieved what the club's achieved in the last 12 months or so with a premiership and you find yourself in a run of form like you have in the last 6 weeks, is there still that same amount of confidence or is there question marks starting to be asked?
Oh, I think we've looked at a lot of stuff over the last couple of weeks and looking at our best footy. And yeah, we just sort of wanted to get back to playing something near that yesterday. And we know it's going to be a bit of a process to get back to our best, but it was a good start yesterday. And hopefully we can build on that moving forward.
Matt, as someone that has been part of the Hawthorn dynasty, do you have a bigger role in guiding some of the younger Western Bulldogs players when it comes to backing it up and going again this year? Have you had more of a role?
I suppose I went through, although I was a very ordinary player at the time, I was lucky enough to experience it with Hawthorn in 08 and 09. And, yeah, so we didn't really get on back on track the whole year and, yeah, sort of just let one slip there. So trying to get back on track this year and make a run now. And, yeah, I think we can do it. And, yes, that was a good start.
Sounds like you're at the kennel already with the dogs going on in the background there, Matty. But...
big, tough cavoodle going off.
But it was a scrappy win, yes, because Carlton made it that. Sometimes you need those games to really get you rolling as a team, just to do those hard little things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those wins are extra special. And I think everyone loved getting back to the MCG and to have a first game of play as well and play so well. And a few of our other guys have had a good couple of weeks, even though we haven't been getting the wins, but they're really growing and maturing, which is nice.
Do you think you guys are getting closer to a settled side? Every week we see the Doggies make 4 or 5 changes each week.
Yeah, we've been forced into that a fair bit throughout the year. And yeah, it sort of feels like the last couple of weeks have been a little bit more settled and yeah, hopefully not too many more injuries would be nice.
And pretty impressive debut yesterday from, what's his name?
Lewis Young.
That's it.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was good to see a guy that hadn't had any mental scars playing footy, just a young kid, and just come and play just how he's been playing in the VFL. That's all we asked, and just backed himself and straightened the long sleeves, which I like as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
You talked about the forced changes. Has that been understated, perhaps, from a broader football community discussion point when they talk about the Bulldogs, how hard it is to get 4 or 5 in every week and try and play the same level of footy?
Oh, I haven't really thought about it too much, but it is nice going into games with the same 22 each week, but you obviously build good chemistry and relationships. But, yeah, I suppose every club's got their injuries and they have to make changes throughout the year, so we can't really dwell on that.
One guy you got back was Mitch Wallace after that horrific broken leg, and the way he's come back is, I think not too many people would have thought that he'd get back to this level so quickly. What were the expectations from you as a teammate of Mitch when he came back?
Yeah, I think it was just everyone was just rapt to see him back. But, yeah, the way he's gone about it just cracked in straight from day one. And he probably played one more game in the VFL than he liked. And I know that sort of spurred him on even more. And once he's been back in the side, he's been incredible around the ball and really hunting well, which we probably lacked in the start of the year.
You play up in Cairns. Have you played up in Cairns yet before?
Yeah, went up there last year, yep.
And
yep.
What are the difficulties of going and playing up there? Is it humidity a factor or is it just the fact that it's a big travel?
Yeah, they've obviously got the travel. Yeah, the humidity is a massive one. It's hard to plan for in these Melbourne winters, so it's going to be a bit of a shock to the system. And obviously, with the humidity and stuff, it's going to be very sweaty and it makes it pretty much a wet weather game. I think if anyone watched the Adelaide game on the weekend, it looked pretty slippery up in Darwin.
Sweatbands?
Headband? Maybe a big, thick headband?
I don't know about a headband. It might be more Johannesson style, but I might have a sweatband, yeah.
Look, we're all talking about the Bulldogs. We're all got our view on the Premiership team and where they sit this year. In your view, are you far off where you were as a team last year? And is it just that the competition is better? Is it more even? Or is it that you guys really do have to lift your game? What's your view on that?
I think it's a combination of both. I think if we're in this position last year, well, there mightn't have been as many teams around that sort of 6th to 11th spot, really, and you could have probably snuck in. But this year, you've really got to bank your wins and, yeah, we've got a bit of work to do and, yeah, as I said, it was just a good start yesterday.
Are you good enough to make finals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's still in our hands, and we believe we're still one of the best sides in the competition, and there's no reason why we can't get back there this year.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.